You're listening to CJLO News. The City of Montreal has secured $25 million in federal funding to move forward with its long-awaited Falaise Saint-Jacques Nature Park project. The project will transform the wooded escarpment and former Turcotte rail yards into a 60-hectare park. Plans include trails along the ridge, a 3-kilometer multi-use bike path at its base, and a pedestrian and cycling bridge over Highway 20 connecting the Lachine Canal. Gracia Kasoki-Katawa, mayor of Côte-des-Neiges, Notre-Dame-de-Grâce, announced the news Thursday, saying the money means the park is officially a go. The city has budgeted $63 million total for the park over the next decade and is counting on more help from Quebec and Ottawa. Federal support could eventually reach $65 million. But conservation groups are still pushing for the park to include wider, quote, eco-corridors, unquote, over Highway 20, and not just the pedestrian bridge, to connect green spaces and allow passage for wildlife. One local group, Sauvons la Falaise, fought to get this area designated as a park back in 2018. This group keeps Falaise as their main focus. They clean and maintain the area on a regular volunteer basis and have also been lobbying for more work to be done. Here is one of their members, David Gamper, talking about what they want to see the money spent on.
The Parc Turco area is on the south side of the Highway 20. And that park is at the moment just an abandoned ex-highway site where the 20 used to run. So we're hoping very much that that is rehabilitated and turned into a park. And also that a bridge is built between the Falaise and the new park on the south side, linking the communities to the north and the south, and also providing a green passageway for not only people, but also for animals and linking communities, providing a whole network of biodiversity corridors in Montreal.
Gamper says this area is of particular importance for biodiversity and community livelihood.
Well, it's a piece of urban nature. That's the thing. It's very close to where a lot of people live, and it's wild. And something that it's a resource that a lot of people didn't even know was there. As it becomes more of a known thing in the park, I believe it'll be used more and more. At the moment, it's already used by upwards of 50 to 100 people a day. And I think it could have potential to be used by hundreds a day and create a lot of happiness, basically, and a lot of relief from urban ills.
For CJLO News and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Adam Innes. Did I relish the truth till it came out of that to deserve your time? Told you nobody's stories, they sure as hell were in mine.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Tommy John Show here on CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal. Hope everyone's doing well. And we have an unbelievable show for you guys today. It is a great day. It is beautiful outside. The sun is out. It is warm. And we're in late September having this weather. God, it's unbelievable. So we have an amazing day, an amazing show on this September the 29th. And what a weekend and week it was in the world of sports. The Ryder Cup, the NFL games were unbelievable. One of the biggest weekends in college football that I can remember was this weekend. Major League Baseball wrapping up. It was truly one of the great sports weekends of the year, and we get to recap it right here on the Tommy John Show. If you're new to the program, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or X. Spotify, you name it, the Tommy John Show is on it, so show us some support. Wherever you follow your social media platforms, the Tommy John Show is on it. And if you missed the show, check it out on Spotify right after on Monday afternoons. The show will be posted there as well, so make sure to do that. So what a week. What a week it was. We will quickly start off recapping the NFL games. Then don't worry, we will get into the baseball. We'll preview the wild card rounds. We'll talk about the Ryder Cup. But the NFL is king, so we have to start off there, and it obviously started on Thursday night in a terrible football game until it wasn't in the last 5 minutes when Arizona decided to show up. But in the end, Sam Darnold and the Seahawks get a big win. They're 3-1 right now. And listen, Sam Darnold, he's really putting the narrative to bed that he was just a product of Kevin O'Connell. Now, Kevin O'Connell and Kyle Shanahan did kind of, you know, pick him up, dust him off, taught him actually how to play quarterback in the NFL. And he did that in Minnesota very well. Learned behind Shanahan when he was the backup 2 years ago when the Niners lost to the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. He was the backup to Purdy. So Shanahan obviously spent a lot of time with him, spent a lot of time with Brock Purdy, goes to Minnesota, becomes the starter in Minnesota because of J.J. McCarthy's injury. And he had a tremendous year, over 35 touchdown passes. They won 14 games. And just because he played poorly at the two biggest times of the year, the last week of the year against the Lions to get the one seed and win the NFC North, and in that wild card game against the Rams, he was awful in both those games, and that's what people thought Sam Darnold truly was. And I'm not saying Sam Darnold's a top five quarterback, but he is playing like a top 12 to 14 quarterback in the league, which teams are searching for right now. One of them would be the Minnesota Vikings with McCarthy out. Like the Giants when they had Russell Wilson, they would have killed to have Sam Darnold production. How about Carolina? You don't think Carolina wishes they had Mayfield or Sam Darnold back right now? How about the Saints? Like, there's a lot of teams in the NFL. Most teams in the NFL would like to have Sam Darnold the way he's playing right now. It's a very familiar offense for him under Kubiak, and that defense in Seattle is for real. Mike McDonald has them running all over the place. They did give up the two touchdown drives at the end of the game to Kyler Murray, which is a bit odd, but that is a big, big win for Seattle to go 3-1, and they obviously have big games coming up with the Rams on the schedule. They still get to play San Francisco again. This is a very, very good football team that will be a factor in the NFC. And if you look at it from Arizona's point of view, they've got talent. They just let that one slip away. They let it slip away. They just did not come out ready to play. Their defense kept them in the game, and it was cool. The offense did nothing. Marvin Harrison was dropping the ball everywhere. It was a disaster. But give them credit. They came back in the game, tied the game late, and they just let it slip at the end. Mostly because the kicker didn't kick it into the landing zone. Seattle got at the 40-yard line. Don't have to go that far for Myers to kick a game-winning kick. So Seattle 3-1 at a very good spot out in the NFC West. Over in Dublin, Ireland, Aaron Rodgers probably played his best game as a Steeler so far. I know he played great week one against the Jets. He threw for four touchdown passes, but Aaron was incredibly efficient, and what really helped him was that run game. That run game was humming. And for a Pittsburgh Steelers team that in the last 5-6 years, since Le'Veon Bell pretty much, haven't been able to run the football, it was a breath of fresh air for them. Gainwell almost had 100 yards and 2 touchdowns. They got Caleb Johnson in a little bit. So it was a pretty successful game on the ground for the Pittsburgh Steelers, which resulted in Aaron Rodgers doing his little play action stuff, his little bootleg stuff, and he was incredibly efficient. 18 of 22, had a touchdown, didn't turn it over. DK Metcalf had a monster game, 5 catches for 126 yards and that huge touchdown. That is a big, big win for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And more importantly, that defense showed up for the most part with all that talent on it. It's an older defense. Some weeks they're on, some weeks they're off. They made Carson Wentz's life not so simple over the pond in Ireland. So great win by the Steelers. And now are 3-1. And if you look what's happening with Baltimore, their disaster, Joe Burrow is gone for, we'll say the year, what, late December he'll be back. The Cincinnati's an absolute mess. The Browns stink on offense. This is the Steelers' division right now, and it is opening up for them rather quickly in the AFC North. Atlanta, they seem to do this all the time. We talked about it last week. They are a team that lets you down when you want to buy in the most, and we were all out on the Atlanta Falcons. They lost by 30 points at the Carolina Panthers, and what do they follow it up the next week when everyone's off the bandwagon? A 34-27 win. Michael Penix, who couldn't complete a pass last weekend, went for 313, 2 touchdowns, was very efficient. Bijan Robinson might be the best player in football at the minute, whether he's running the ball, whether he's catching the ball. He had 4 catches, 106 yards receiving. He also ran the ball for 75 yards, averaging close to 5 yards a carry and a touchdown. He's doing everything. Drake London is emerging as a top 10 receiver in the NFL. Kyle Pitts was involved. This was a very good performance by the Falcons offense, but I am not buying in just yet because they always find ways to rip your heart out against a team you won't know about. Like the Miami Dolphins, no one cares about the Miami Dolphins. No one will care about the Dolphins in 2025. They will probably win that game because that's what the Falcons do. They will beat good teams, and then when you have a team like a Carolina, like a Miami, like a New York Jets football team, that is the caliber of team the Falcons will just mess up, won't show up, and lose the game. And not just lose the game in the most horrific fashion ever, not even getting a point, losing by 30. So I'm still out in the Falcons. They got all the talent in the world, but I am done buying into the Atlanta Falcons. Somehow, some way, they will just make you scratch your head and think, how in the world are they in this situation again? Against the good teams, they're very dangerous. Michael Penix can throw it all over the yard. But when they play those layup games, when they play those teams that have no business beating them, they usually stink up the joint. So I'm not fully in on Atlanta yet, despite all the talent they had. Jayden Daniels didn't even play. So let's pump the brakes a little bit, but that is a nice win and to get back to 500 for the Atlanta Falcons. The New York Giants. What a day for Jackson Dart. He did not light the world on fire, but just him starting, the aura, the swagger that comes with Jackson Dart really had a huge effect on the Giants. The Chargers pass blocking was appalling. They lose Joe Alt in the game as well. So what was a strength then, that offensive line and that pass blocking when they had Rashawn Slater at left tackle, Joe Alt at right tackle, now losing 2 all-pro caliber tackles. Justin Herbert was getting pounded all day long. So that's going to be a very concerning thing. Alt should be back in a month's time, but still, that is not a good loss for the LA Chargers. Tough spot going West Coast to East Coast, 1 o'clock game. Jackson Dart, all the storylines and the stadium being packed. That was a tough spot for the Chargers, and they fall 21-18 in a very sloppy game. But Cam Scataboo's becoming a New York favorite. Jackson Dart, I'm sure he'll get better as it progresses here in 2025. Didn't light the world on fire, but he at least gave the Giants some juice, which Russell Wilson clearly was not giving them. What a performance by the Philadelphia Eagles. They came out hot, blocked the punt early on, returned for a touchdown, did not look back. They allowed Tampa Bay back into the game in the fourth quarter, in the second half, specifically in that fourth quarter. But when the defense had to make stops, they did. They picked off Baker Mayfield in the end zone, got after him on that last drive as well. listen, the big thing for me for Philadelphia is how involved is A.J. Brown going to be in this game plan? Because A.J. Brown didn't do anything. He had 2 catches for 7 yards. That's the big point I want to look at. Are they just going to try and pound the ball up with Saquon and it's A.J. Dillon kid and Hurts? Are they just going to do little screen plays to Dallas Goedert or Devontae Smith? Like, I don't know, really know what the game plan is on offense when it's passing the football. But A.J. Brown, after having a huge game last weekend against the Rams, thought it would continue this week. He was basically not used at all. He could have just sat on the sidelines, have a cup of coffee, and relax, and the game wouldn't have changed at all. So I'm interested to see what happens with A.J. Brown, a very vocal character. Is he going to stay quiet because the team's winning, or is he going to start talking now because he's not getting his targets, which could easily happen. If I hear tomorrow A.J. Brown ticked off that he's not getting his 10 targets a game, despite being 4-0 and the defending Super Bowl champions, that would not surprise me in the slightest. But a very good performance by the Eagles, especially on defense and special teams. Tampa Bay, though, they hung in there. Baker, that costly pick at the end, if they could even get a field goal in that spot with 5-6 minutes left, could have been a different game. Bucky Irving was unbelievable. He had 102 receiving yards to go along with 63 rushing yards. This Ibuka kid from Ohio State's already a star. I'm not concerned about Tampa Bay. That division stinks. Carolina stinks. New Orleans stinks. The Falcons we just mentioned, I'm not buying them yet until they finally prove me wrong and make the playoffs and have a good run. I'm not buying Atlanta, so that leaves Tampa Bay, and they should be in a good spot in the NFC South. That division's absolutely appalling. But they got a big test next weekend at Seattle, San Francisco, Detroit. It's a tough stretch coming up for the Buccaneers, but don't you worry. They get their New Orleans twice. They get the Patriots. They get the Dolphins, the Panthers twice. There's some easy games on this schedule, so this should be a double-digit win team in Tampa, Florida. Quickly to New England. That was an absolutely, I don't even know what to call it, a demolition job, a one-sided pounding by the New England Patriots, and Mike Vrabel, that's the kind of football he wanted to play. They manhandled them on defense. Drake May's turning into a star quarterback. It's what all Pats fans wanted. 14-17, 203, 2 touchdowns in the air, not to mention he threw for one as well. So Drake rushed for one, sorry, as well. A very impressive performance by Drake May. And if you look at the Patriots' schedule, outside of the game next week at Buffalo, okay, listen to the next three after that. New Orleans, Tennessee, Cleveland. New Orleans, Tennessee, Cleveland. And I just said to you randomly, name the three worst teams in the NFL. I'd say 80% of the people would give me New Orleans, Tennessee, and Cleveland. Like, the Titans had the first pick in the draft, the Browns had the second pick in the draft before they traded back, and then the Saints, coming in the year, everyone knew they'd be the worst team in the league. So it's not that crazy to say after this Sunday night game against Buffalo, the Patriots are going to win 3 football games. New Orleans, Tennessee, Cleveland. So it's looking up for New England. I was trying to be optimistic earlier in the year. That Raiders game really ticked me off. They came out flat. Last weekend, turned the ball over at will against the Steelers. Hated that. That was awful. But they're 2-2, probably going to be 2-3 after playing Buffalo, but then they get 3 games in a row to turn the season around. I said this is going to be a 7-8 win football team, and I think the Patriots will do that in 2025. The Houston Texans, 26-0 over the Titans. Listen, the Titans stink, and Callahan should be fired. He's not a good head coach. Trying to turn it around, it's not working for him. Cam Ward, I like a lot, but he's just there with absolutely nothing around him. It's a bad, bad time to be a Tennessee Titans fan. They lose 26-0 to Houston, and the Texans get their first win of the season. Buffalo in a very strange game. New Orleans hung on for dear life in that football game. They were just always there. 1 score down, took the lead, would just stay in the game as long as they could, but in the end, Buffalo pulls away at home, 31-19. The Detroit Lions continue their great play, 34-10 over the Browns, and Detroit now are 3-1, and with the weird tie rule with the Packers last night against Dallas, they are the number one seed in the NFC North. So that's very good for the Detroit Lions as well. Big win against Cleveland. The Jags are 3-1. That was a crazy game. Brock Purdy was horrendous, was turning the ball over like crazy. That second interception he had was awful. One of the worst picks you'll ever see. Just threw it right to that linebacker from Utah. I'm forgetting his name, who plays for the Jags. He had two interceptions that game. Devin Lloyd. Thank you. Devin Lloyd. He had two picks in that game. Also forced the fumble in the last drive. He was unbelievable. But Brock Purdy, his first game back, and he really stunk up the joint. So that is very concerning for San Francisco fans, and they need to rebound quickly because on Thursday, they are at L.A. in a short week to take on the Rams. Speaking of the Rams, 27-20 over the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts had that football game. A.D. Mitchell, one of the weirder rules in football, he fumbles the ball right before crossing the plane, and it counts as a touchback. That was very strange. So that was 6 points off the board there. And then they take a lead late in the game, called back on an A.D. Mitchell hold. That's a backbreaker. But the Colts, I'm very impressed. Went out to L.A. and should have won that football game. To me, despite Jacksonville playing well, are the best team in the AFC South. Daniel Jones is playing at a high level. Shane Steichen's doing a fantastic job as head coach. So really like what the Colts are doing. Chicago, in just a awful football game, incredibly entertaining, but an awful football game. Geno Smith had the worst performance maybe of his career, which is saying a lot. Three picks, two to the Kevin Byard. Oh, awful, awful, awful performance by Geno Smith. Then he starts out the second half throwing a pick to Stevenson. The horrendous performance by Geno Smith. And then the worst part of it all, Max Crosby played out of his mind. Ashton Jeanty had a breakout game. They're in a position to take the lead with 30 seconds left with one of the better kickers in football in Carlson, and it's blocked. So despite the Raiders playing Geno Smith playing horribly, Ashton Jeanty playing out of his mind, Max Crosby being maybe the best defensive player in football yesterday, all those things going right except for your quarterback, you're still in the game. And then to lose like that against a Bears team, which I don't know what to think. That's two wins in a row, so they are 500. But that was an ugly, ugly game yesterday against the Las Vegas Raiders. They get the job done 25-24, but I'm not high on either of those football teams. Speaking of an absolutely horrible, horrible performance, the Baltimore Ravens went into Kansas City and got whopped, absolutely destroyed. 37-20, Lamar Jackson was awful in the football game. I'm not buying the fact that this is it doesn't mean much, 1-3. The Ravens don't look right. That defense is depleted now with Humphrey injured, Roquan Smith injured. It's just Kyle Hamilton, really the only star left on that defense. But that was a horrible, horrible performance by the Ravens. Kansas City looked much better. They got Xavier Worthy back, and they made him a huge focal point of the offense. Mahomes had his best game in a few years. He had 4 touchdown passes. Kansas City looks like they're slowly turning the corner. It was a bad start, but they're just getting healthier, and that defense with Spags calling the plays, scary. Very, very scary. In a game that was 4 hours long, and I watched every second of it, to end in a tie on Sunday night was a bit frustrating. 40-40 in Micah Parsons' return to Dallas. Dak Prescott played out of his mind. Jordan Love was pretty good. They got Matt Golden involved in Green Bay. George Pickens had a monster game. But for Green Bay, that's a deflating tie. They bring in Parsons. This defense is going to be one of the best in football. To have 40 put on you, that's a bit rough. That's a bit rough. And it could have been disaster for the Packers. That play at the end, Jordan Love, I mean, the fact he didn't call a timeout or do any of that, it was crazy. The clock ticked down. He's very lucky the ball just went down and didn't fly up into the air and took a second off the clock. Because if that happened, Jordan Love would be getting killed all over sports talk radio today. But there's 1 second left on the clock. McManus kicks the game-tying kick, and it ends in a tie, 40-40. We still got 2 games left from week 4 in the NFL. The Jets and the Dolphins at 10:15. That's going to be a tough watch. But then another one, Denver hosting Cincinnati at 8:15 on ABC Monday Night Football. So you'd like to think Denver gets out of that game. Jake Browning was awful. But Bo Nix and the Broncos, who people had Super Bowl aspirations for, They were the dark horse for everyone. Oh, this defense, Bo Nix, Sean Payton. I know they lost two close games to two good teams in Indy and in the Chargers, but they have not impressed me at all. They barely beat the Titans week one, so this should be a huge priority of the Denver Broncos. Not only win the game, but to show some fight and be a dominant team in the AFC, because on paper, they're right there. They're as good as anyone on paper. Like, that defense is top three. Bo Nix is good. They got a lot of good receivers as well. Love Cortland Sutton, like the Franklin kid. To me, Denver should win comfortably tonight, but if they don't, we might have to start asking questions about the Denver Broncos. We might have to start asking questions. So that's our quick little football recap. We'll get more into the NFL later in the show. We do have to talk about the Ryder Cup. What a performance by Team Europe. Now, they did try to throw it away late on Sunday afternoon. Like, they only won one match, and that was Ludvig Åberg against Patrick Cantlay. That was the only full point they got yesterday. But they were so dominant early on in the week, especially the alternate shots. They won 3-1 both sessions, I believe. That Rory McIlroy, Tommy Fleetwood team was unbelievable. They were by far the better team. The crowd, despite being obnoxious and crazy, didn't really do much to them. They were locked in. And the U.S., listen, they showed a whole lot of fight to make it that close. But Europe were the better team. They were the better team for 2 of the 3 days, 4 out of the 5 sessions. And there's just so many singles matches that anything's possible. You can basically win all your matches on the last day and win the Ryder Cup. But it was a great performance by Europe. The Americans were out of sync. To think that Scottie Scheffler went 0-4 before Sunday and DeChambeau didn't really do much, it was horrendous. And then the big question mark was why they put Morikawa and Harris English together. All these analytic guys were saying that could be the worst alternate shot pairing out of all the outcomes, just basically how they play. It doesn't work, their alternate shot. Yet they used them not once, but twice, and they got killed both times by Rory and Tommy Fleetwood. But it was getting dicey there on Sunday afternoon. The U.S. were mounting a comeback, and then when they needed a huge half point, Shane Lowry got the huge half point they needed to take out the Americans. It was dicey. Russell Henley had the one-up lead on 18. He missed a very makeable birdie putt, and then Shane Lowry made his putt to retain the Ryder Cup for Europe. Here was Shane Lowry following Europe retaining the Ryder Cup.
The Ryder Cup for the European team. You look in disbelief. Tell us all how you are feeling and where this moment ranks in your career.
I mean, I've been so lucky to experience amazing things in this game. That was the hardest couple of hours of my whole life, honestly. I just can't believe it. I can't believe that putt went in. I stood over it going, this is it. I said to Darren walking down 18, I said, I have a chance to do the coolest thing in my life here. And, like, the Ryder Cup means everything to me, honestly. I won the Open in Ireland. It's amazing. It's a dream come true. But the Ryder Cup for me is everything. Like, and to do that there today in the 18 green in front of everyone, it's like, it was so hard out there. I mean, the fair play to the US lads. Like, we knew they were going to come out fighting, but yeah, I just hope one of the boys can get a half point so we can get the win. You know, obviously we've retained the cup, but we want to win as well. But yeah.
So that was Shane Lowry. They did get the half a point. They got two more halves. Hatton halved his match with Morikawa, I believe, and then what was the other one again? Oh, McIntyre have his match as well. So 15-13 is the final, and that is the first time an away team has won a Ryder Cup since the Europeans did it 13 years ago in 2012 at Medina, the Miracle at Medina, when they were down 10-6 going into Sunday singles, and they mounted the biggest comeback in Ryder Cup history. So that was the last time it happened. They did it again in New York at Bethpage Black. And if you're the Americans, that is a big, big loss. You know, no, they came out fighting. And they're like, you know what? We can leave with our head held high. We came back and we fought in the Sunday singles. Good for you, but you lost this event on the first 2 days, especially the first 3 sessions. Like, that was a backbreaker. You start, you get everyone fired up. It's the Ryder Cup in New York. To lose 3-1 in that first session in the alternate shot, and the U.S. have the advantage of picking how the course was set up, picking which event you want to play first. They had all the advantages and the crowd. And to still lose, that is very bad for the U.S. Ryder Cup team. And we'll see what happens in Ireland in 2 years. You'd like to think Europe's going to beat the brakes off them in Ireland. They could set up the course how they want. Trust me, they're going to grow the rough like crazy. The Americans don't like playing in the thick rough. All the stats say that in the Ryder Cup. So you like to favor Europe in 2 years' time, but it is a very, very big defeat for the Americans. They wanted to prove everyone wrong. They got destroyed in Rome at the Ryder Cup there last time. They wanted to put on a show in front of the home crowd. Keegan Bradley, it was a new vibe, a younger captain. This was supposed to be the U.S.'s time to take back the Ryder Cup and to lose. And they made it respectable, but to lose how they were losing through 2 days was unbelievable. So credit the European team. Their big stars played unbelievable. John Rahm was fantastic. Rory was fantastic. Tommy Fleetwood was 4-0 before the Sunday singles. Justin Rose went. Bryson DeChambeau and Scottie Scheffler were paired together by Keegan Bradley. That was the Americans going all in, and they were playing out of their minds, and Justin Rose was keeping the Europeans in that match single-handedly. He was like 8-under par on the front nine or 7-under par. He was carrying that team, and then Tommy Fleetwood showed up on the back nine, and that was all it took for the Europeans to pretty much clinch the Ryder Cup on Saturday. It was close. It was dicey. Justin Thomas won his match early Sunday. Cameron Young, Scottie Scheffler, DeChambeau was 5 down, and he fought back to get a half point. It was getting dicey there for a while. I'm like, if Shane Lowry doesn't have this match, Europe could be in deep, deep trouble. They fought through, and they got the big win over in New York at Bethpage Black. So congrats to Team Europe. They win the 2025 Ryder Cup and the next Ryder Cup, like I mentioned, in Ireland at Adair Manor in 2027. So can't wait for that. We do got a President's Cup next year. Which would be fun, but the U.S. always win those. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we have to talk about that unbelievable weekend in college football. Alabama, Georgia, Penn State, Oregon, Mississippi State, Tennessee game was outstanding, Illinois, USC, Texas A&M, Auburn. There were so many good games, classic finishes. We'll get into that next on the Tommy John Show right after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Hey, do you love movies? Discover the best of art house cinema in 3 theaters all across the city. That is Cinéma Musée, Du Parc, and Beaubien. Students only pay $11 per ticket, all day, every day. See you at the movies!
Do you want to have a discussion about movies?
Mrs. Robinson, you're trying to seduce me.
And have the iconic sounds of cinema?
Well, then tune in to At the Movies every Tuesday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. only on CJLO 1690 a.m. with your hosts,
Remy
and Danny.
Back here in the Tommy John Show. What a weekend in college football. What a weekend. Man, that was something special. It really was. So before the week even started, we all circled Alabama-Georgia just because it's a great rivalry, always lives up to the hype, especially after that game last year, the back and forth, Alabama being up 28-0, Georgia coming to take the lead, then they go back and forth, Alabama pulls it out, not to mention all the classic SEC battles they had. They played in the national championship a few times in the Nick Saban-Kirby Smart rivalry era. It's just a great rivalry. So we all love that one. Then Penn State and Oregon, which, man, what a game that was. What a game that was. And the reason I say what a great game, because it showed how talented both teams are, but it also showed how flawed both teams are as well. Now, it was 3-3 forever in that football game. Both offenses stunk. Penn State's play calling was appalling. And Oregon should have been up by 40 points. They really should have. Because Oregon were moving the ball. Their quarterback looked calm, looked composed. They were being efficient, moving the ball down the field. But then for some reason, once they would get into Penn State territory, I don't know. They would just like overthink it. They'd go backwards, stupid penalties, going for it, not getting it, missing field goals. It was a strange, strange thing when Oregon moved the ball into Penn State territory. Now, don't get me wrong. Later in the game, Dan Lanning's like, the hell with it. We're just going to pound it down their throat. We're going to run the ball. And they started to do that, opened up some run lanes, and the play action started to work. And then they scored twice late in that ball game. And I thought it was over. When the way Penn State was moving the football, they couldn't do anything. They could not do anything. And when they went up 17-3 on Penn State in the fourth quarter, and Dan Lanning's doing the it's over, game over thing, I thought it was too, Dan Lanning. I thought that game was over. Dante Moore, the quarterback, thought it was over. Deer Hill, the running back, he thought it was over. They were all getting animated on the sidelines. But give Penn State credit. The old Penn State would have folded. James Franklin's Penn State would have folded. But what does James Franklin, Drew Allard, the Nittany Lions do? They go down the field, score a touchdown, make a stop on defense, go down the field tight with 30 seconds left. Overtime. They forced overtime. After not scoring a touchdown, very similar to Arizona on Thursday against Seattle, they did nothing the whole game, no touchdowns. Then when they need to score two touchdowns at the end, they do it. They go to overtime. They score in overtime. They get Oregon to fourth down in overtime. One play away from a signature win for James Franklin and the Nittany Lions. Of course, Oregon converts. Of course, they score a touchdown. They go to second overtime. They score a touchdown, but they stop them on the two-point conversion. So all Penn State needs to do is score a touchdown, two-point conversion, ball game. And what does Drew Aller, the number one pick in the draft, some people say, the quarterback any NFL player, any NFL scout would love, the player that any NFL coach would love, pro body, huge arm, what does he do? Throws one of the worst interceptions you'll ever see. So it's not the Penn State of new. It's still the Penn State of old. And this is the Penn State program that we have killed on this show for a while now. We have killed Penn State for years. And the reason why I kill Penn State, and it's nothing to do against James Franklin, I think he's a good coach. It's nothing against the recruiting. They do a hell of a job recruiting. For some reason, when they play a team with a pulse, not when they're playing Old Dominion, not when they're beating Villanova by 60, when they play a ranked team, they fold. And if you think I'm crazy, look it up. Look at James Franklin's record against top 10 teams or top 15 teams. I would like you to look it up. It is appalling. And in the last few years, off the top of my head, last year they had Abdul Carter. They still had Drew Aller. They had Tyler Warren. They still had the two running backs, Singleton, I forget the other kid's name, Catron Allen. They had all these guys. They had an easy schedule. The only two teams that we'll say were quality, I'm not going to throw Boise State in there, and that was an ugly Fiesta Bowl as well, Ohio State, Notre Dame. They lost both games. I can remember hundreds of times when Ohio State's gone into Happy Valley and have beaten the Nittany Lions under James Franklin. Penn State, for some reason, are loved by the committee. Oh my God, this is the greatest team ever. What's not to like about Penn State? Penn State this, Penn State that. And then when they play a big game, they lose. And it was changing. I was going to freak out. Oh my God, this is a new Nittany Lions team. They were down two scores against the top 10 team, whiteout game and all. They finally have turned the corner, and then Drew Aller does that. And Drew Aller had the one nice throw in the fourth quarter on the first touchdown, but then after that, they just handed the ball off, ran the ball down Oregon's throat to get back into the game. But Drew Aller in this football game, 14 of 25, 137 yards, did have two touchdowns, and one of the worst picks you'll ever see. It was appalling. That was the most Florida State thing I've ever seen. It was in a different wrapping. It wasn't just from the get-go, just roll over and die kind of a Penn State. This was like the tail end of last year, Penn State against Notre Dame. They're in the game. They're the better team. Better team. Penn State. Better team on paper. Better this. Oregon goes in there, whoops them around. But they show fight. They show resolve. They come back. They have a chance to win the game in overtime, and our quarterback throws a pick. But give Oregon credit. That's not an easy spot. Happy Valley, whiteout game at night. Dante Moore played very well. Three touchdowns, no picks. He also ran the ball pretty well as well. That's a big win for Oregon. And to win in Penn State and send a message to the rest of the Big Ten that they're still an elite program is huge. Absolutely huge. But if you look at Penn State now, that schedule stinks again. Where's their big win coming from? They play Ohio State in Ohio State. I don't think they win there. Indiana? Beginning of the year, you said, oh, what, two good games maybe? Oregon and Ohio State? They're already 0-1. Then they have UCLA, who's the worst program in the Big Ten right now. Northwestern's a close second. Iowa can't move the football. Then they have Ohio State. They have Indiana. But then Michigan State, Nebraska, Rutgers. That is a joke of a schedule. And Penn State's going to get in. They're going to get into the playoff. We all know it. They're going to win 10 games this year. But they're not winning a national championship. I'm going to say it right now. Everyone picking Penn State beginning of the year? No. Penn State is not winning the national championship because James Franklin in big games and Drew Aller that I've seen in big games are just not up to the test. They're just not up to it. Quickly, Alabama and Georgia. I was very impressed by Alabama in that football game. That quarterback can really throw the football. Was it Sampson? He's a very good quarterback. The ball was coming out of his hands quick. Ty Simpson, yeah, 276, two touchdowns. I was very impressed by him, and I was really impressed by Alabama's defense. They made some big stops late in that game. And Kirby Smart, the one thing I will say about him is he's a tremendous coach, one of the best in the country. But him not kicking the field goal there late in that game, down three, tie the football game. Okay, it's 4th-and-1. You want to move the sticks. You want to take the lead, get the crowd going. There's still a fair amount of time left in that football game. You're down three, and you got a chip shot field goal, and it's 4th-and-1, probably 4th-and-2. You got to kick the field goal there. You have to. It's been a grind scoring points the whole game. You got to kick the field goal there, tied up at 24. He doesn't, and that was pretty much the ball game. They got the ball back once, I believe, and then they didn't do anything there. And Alabama rolls out the clock. Kellen DeBoer was aggressive on fourth down. They picked up on third down. They picked up the first down, and that was the ball game. And Georgia, they're still going to make the playoff. I go now with the 12-team thing. It's not as devastating as a loss as it could have been in weeks past. But they got a tough schedule. They have Georgia. They have Ole Miss. They have Texas. Georgia Tech. That's not an easy game anymore. They're pretty good. They do have Auburn as well. This is still a 10-win football team, and a 10-win Georgia team will make the playoff. But that is a the biggest win for Kellen DeBoer in Alabama. And I think DeBoer now is 2-0 against Georgia at Alabama. Beat him in the classic game last year, went on the road and beat him this year. So it's going to be interesting to see how Alabama goes from here. People wanted DeBoer fired after the Florida State debacle. They got Vanderbilt at home. They got Missouri, Tennessee, LSU, Oklahoma, Auburn. It's not an easy schedule, but if DeBoer and Alabama can keep this up, they're a big threat to win the national championship, especially if their quarterback Simpson plays like that. Other notable scores from college football before we hit our second break and then talk about a Major League Baseball. The big one I want to talk about is obviously Virginia beating Florida State on Friday night. That was a classic game. They win in double overtime. Florida State, that's a crushing loss. You're in a great spot in the ACC. Now you've got Miami next week. That could be a loss. They need to win the ACC. And to lose a game to Virginia, who is very much in that conference now. They have the head-to-head over you. They've won three in a row. You have Georgia Tech, who's undefeated. Louisville's undefeated. Cal's pretty good. Miami of Florida's the number three team in the country. Duke's playing better. This is a much, much, much better ACC than in years past, at least in the division. If they played an SEC team, they'd probably get their doors blown off. But to get into the college football playoff now, to win the ACC, they're going to need some help. They're going to need Virginia to lose some games. They're going to need Louisville to lose some games. Miami of Florida is probably a shoo-in to win the conference, if we're being honest. But that was a huge loss, because a one-loss Florida State team lost to Miami, you're in the playoff. Losing to Virginia, that's a big blow. That's a very big blow. The other big score, Mississippi State put on a good performance. They fell, though, at home, 41-34. They had Tennessee scared there for a bit. Indiana and Iowa was a great game. Ohio State were tested. Ole Miss take down LSU. That's one of the biggest wins Lane Kiffin has had at Ole Miss, so that was fantastic. Garrett Nussmeier has not played well this year, albeit the offensive line is not amazing. But Garrett Nussmeier, he was talks of being the number one pick in the draft. And if you look at it, who's going to go number one now? Was it going to be Garrett Nussmeier? Is it Lenora Sellers? Drew Aller, who stunk up the joint over the weekend against Oregon? There's really a Mendoza now, the kid from Indiana. Who's going to be the number one pick in the draft? Because it's going to be a quarterback. So who's it going to be? Not one has separated itself from the pack as of yet. But you know how it goes in college football and the NFL draft. Once the season's over, some random kid who stunk up the joint in college is going to make a jump up people's draft boards just because of his physical makeup. Physical makeup. Like Zach Wilson. Like Trey Lance. Trey Lance played like three college games and he went third overall in the draft. Like, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But the pre-draft process, you sit down with guys. No. I go on what I see. I saw Jane Daniels in college. Yeah, this kid's going to be pretty good. You see Andrew Luck in college. You see all these guys playing college. Jared Goff. Oh, they're pretty good. Drake May, he's pretty good. Caleb Williams. Yeah, he's pretty good. He won a Heisman. Like, you can sort of tell who the good players are. So as of right now, I mean, Lenore Sellers has the best physical makeup, so maybe he'll go number one overall, but I don't know as we stand right now. No quarterback has really taken that spot and have run with it. But we're only 4 weeks in, 4 or 5 weeks in, so still a lot of college football to be played. The big game I'm looking forward to next weekend. Alabama Vanderbilt's a very good one. Let's see how Arch Manning responds against Florida in Florida. That should be a good one. Ohio State Minnesota, very good game. And obviously, how will Florida State rebound against Miami at home Saturday night? That's going to be a big question as well. So there you have it. That's our quick little college football recap. So we're going to take our second break. And when we come back, we have to discuss Major League Baseball. The Blue Jays need to win their last four and hope the Yankees... I'm phrasing that poorly. If the Blue Jays lost one of their last four, they were done for the division, because the Yankees weren't going to lose the Baltimore. There was pressure. They had to go and win their last four games. They went and did that. They are the American League East champions, the first time since 2015. So congrats to the Toronto Blue Jays. We'll break down Major League Baseball's postseason next, right after this quick break from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Arts in the Margins present Festival Flux, a Montreal experimental music festival taking place from October 1st to 11th. Festival Flux is a unique mix of concerts, workshops, roundtables, presentations, and publication launches, all configured around performance, place, and politics. You won't want to miss innovative artists such as Beam Splitter, Anne F. Jacques and Ryoko Okama, Bozzini Quartet, Andrew Cyril, Christina Warren, Violence Gratuite, Nada El Shazly, and more. For more information on the festival and how to get tickets, visit fluxmtl.org.
Im cabaret, au cabaret, to cabaret.
The Comfy Cabaret is now open every Tuesday at 6. Forget all your fears, problems, struggles, and snuggle up. Relax, I've got all that's going on with local, new, underappreciated artists in a chilled out indie pop landscape. We feature artists every week talking about their stories and music, plus new releases you're sure to love as well. You can find your new favorite artist before the world does right here on the Comfy Cabaret.
Still pretty much the same around here. The neighbor's still shooting all the next year's deer. Boys still lose less than playing at home. But I got better since you got gone. I'm still a few too many on a Friday night.
Back here on the Tommy John Show. We do have to briefly mention the Canadian women's rugby team. What a performance they did. They fell short in the gold medal game at the Women's World Cup to England. But still, to make the final, to see how far the sport has come in Canada is very impressive. So congrats to them. They had a big win in the semifinals, and they just fell short on Saturday against England. So congrats to them, though. Hell of a tournament. They're number two in the world. That's unbelievable. So congrats to them. Big news in the NFL. We just had the break. Malik Nabers, we thought it was a torn ACL. It is a torn ACL. So the star Giants wide receiver, he's out for the year. That's a crushing blow to the Giants. That's a killer. You have the young quarterback in Dart. You're trying to get him used to the NFL, comfortable, and to take out his number one weapon from that offense is a huge blow. That sucks. He was having a fantastic year with Russell Wilson as his quarterback. So, to have the first game Jackson Dart ever plays and to lose Malik Nabers, I'm telling you, MetLife is just the worst field on the planet. The amount of players and star players that get injured there is nuts. I remember a few years ago, Nick Bosa tore his ACL there. Obviously, Joe Alt got hurt in the game yesterday. Malik Nabers tore his ACL. Aaron Rodgers blew his Achilles on that field. Oh, just everyone gets injured on MetLife. It's unbelievable. They got to do something about that turf, man. Call Mara and call Woody Johnson. Put in, like, real turf at MetLife. Is that too hard to ask? The amount of just star players just getting their legs and knees destroyed on that turf is crazy. So that's a big blow for the New York Giants. So if we'll have any more updates, maybe Lamar Jackson's injury update. I don't think it's as serious. She shouldn't miss that much game time, but that was the main big injury I've noticed from yesterday. Malik Nabers, now out for the year. Major League Baseball. So congrats to the Blue Jays. Let me phrase it properly this time. They had to pretty much win out because the Yankees weren't going to lose to Baltimore. The Yankees, the Orioles stink. That was such a bad year for them. A lot of high expectations for the Orioles this year. They got a good roster. It just did not happen whatsoever. They were there to get swept, and the Yankees swept them. So there's a lot of pressure on the Blue Jays, who had their struggles with Tampa Bay this year, and they got it done. And yesterday, it was dicey for a little bit. I know they're up 5-1. They allow the Rays back into the game, but then Alejandro Kirk really took over. George Springer was great as well. They end up destroying the Rays and have clinched the AL East, which is big for the Blue Jays because they get a bye. And more than any other team, the Blue Jays needed this bye. They need Bo Bichette to get healthy. They have an older pitching staff. Bassett, we want the Blue Jays want him to get healthy. Max Scherzer's in his 40s. Shane Bieber's not young anymore. Gausman pitched yesterday. So to give them a week off and get this team really healthy is huge for Toronto. Not to mention their two division foes are going to go at it in New York between the Red Sox and Yankees. So this was the best possible scenario for the Toronto Blue Jays. Get the one seed in the American League East, get a bye, get rested, get healthy, and hit the ground running for the divisional round. So let me quickly walk you through how it all ended. The Blue Jays won the American League East. The Cleveland Guardians, in one of the craziest comebacks ever, they were 15 games back of the Tigers at one point, win the American League Central. And the Seattle Mariners win the American League West. So the two best records were obviously the Blue Jays and the Seattle Mariners. They get the byes. The Cleveland Guardians, they win the American League Central, and they get the worst wildcard team, which was the Detroit Tigers. So right after playing the Tigers earlier this week, they play them again in a three-game series. Best of three, I should say. You win two games, you go on to the next round. So it'll be Tigers and Guardians, Red Sox and Yankees. Man, Red Sox, Yankees. Here we go. Should be fun. We head to the National League. What a disaster in New York. That was appalling. The New York Mets in June were the best team in baseball, the hottest team in baseball, and couldn't be stopped. They had one of the all-time collapses in all of baseball. Okay, you have the Phillies in your division and you lose the lead to the Phillies. To miss the postseason, and with a payroll that's that large, after you gave Soto pretty much $800 million to finish 83-79 and miss on the last day of the year as the third wild card is appalling. It's absolutely appalling. And if you're a New York Mets fan, to lose 2 of 3 to the Marlins on the last weekend of the year is crazy. And as a result, the Cincinnati Reds are the last playoff team in the National League. I cannot wait to track what the Mets do this offseason. Clearly, they have to address that pitching. That pitching staff was brutal. Even Senga couldn't pitch by the end of the year. They sent him down. It was a disaster for the New York Mets. One of the worst second halves you'll ever have in Major League Baseball history. Awful. So we'll quickly go through the National League. The Brewers clinch the one seed. The Philadelphia Phillies win the National League East by 13 games in the end. That was a battle all summer long between the Mets and the Phillies. They ended up winning by 13 games. Oh my goodness. So the Phillies and the Brewers will get the bye. The Brewers had the best record in the National League, and they win the NL Central. And obviously the LA Dodgers win the National League West again. Our wild card teams are the Padres, the Cubs, and the Cincinnati Reds. So our schedule goes as follows. The Padres will play the Cubs. The Reds will be in LA to take on the Dodgers. So tomorrow at 1 o'clock, Tigers, Guardians. At 3, Padres, Cubs. At 6, Red Sox, Yankees. At 9, Reds and Dodgers. And it goes the same through Wednesday, unless they don't have to go to Thursday, sorry. So it's that for sure tomorrow and Wednesday. And then Thursday, if we need game threes, that will be the same schedule. 1 o'clock for Tigers, Guardians. 3 o'clock for Cubs, Padres. 6 o'clock for Red Sox, Yankees. 9 o'clock for Reds, Dodgers. So there we have it. That's where Major League Baseball stands. Then the divisional rounds will start on Saturday. So the Blue Jays will host games starting Saturday. The Phillies, the Brewers, and the Mariners. Those are the teams with byes. So there you have it. That's our quick little MLB recap. The regular season is done, and fall baseball is here. The postseason is here, and I cannot wait. Thank you guys for listening to this week's show of the Tommy John Show. We'll be back next Monday right here on CGLO 1690 AM in Montreal. We'll recap Major League Baseball's first round, the wild card round, and we'll start breaking down the first two games of the divisional round. Huge matchups in college football, and of course, we will get into week number 5 of the National Football League. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll speak to you all next week.
Hi, this is Chaz.